Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the Sludge Pit. And we're back. I've had quite a few questions, actually more like one question, about what happened to the show. Why haven't you guys been on? What's been happening? I'll tell you. I work a lot of hours, and after a certain point, I collapse. And that's what's been happening. But like, work is a good thing. It's good to have it right now. And no complaints here, except for I just need to sleep a little bit more. And that my cat has to stop waking me up at 2 o'clock in the morning, going, meow, 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 meow. I want love. I want love. Okay, okay, okay. Just shut up and just snuggle with me. Okay, we're good. Anyway, so I'm joined tonight by Carl and Adam, and they all have their specific shows on the Legion Network. Carl has Carl's Tavern, Adam has Catholic Rain Mission, and we're going to be talking about banned films tonight. We're actually going to split this into a multi-part show, mostly because I'm having a hard time with the amount of hours in the day. Like, there's 24 hours in a day, and I've got like an hour. So, but that's a part of life. But anyway, there was a bit of an adventure today that involved several hundred miles of driving, a vegan that worked at a butcher shop, smoked fish, and soundtracks that didn't work very well. But anyway, that's a story for a whole different episode. So, yes, we are talking about banned movies. Now, films can be banned for different reasons. It could be politics in different countries. It could be politics in their own country. Or it could be that it's viewed in a certain way. Or another example, it could be just a plain old yucky movie. And we'll go into all the different reasons why films have been banned. And we're actually going to start off tonight with why a film would be banned by the people who make it. Now, we're going to probably talk about some things, some movies you've heard about, and maybe a couple movies you haven't heard about. And so we're going to see how that goes, and if anybody wants to call in and join us, feel free to do so. Our call-in number is 657-333-0397. That's 657-333-0397. So, okay. Now, there's a couple more films that I'm very familiar with, because I do actually have copies of these. We will not explain how, because that's a, well, some people wouldn't exactly like how I got them. But anyway. So, Disney, we'll start off with this. Now, Disney themselves is a huge multinational corporation that I'm not really a big fan of. Anyway, unfortunately, they're in dire straits right now, and their whole company is suffering because of the virus that's going on, which really sucks for the employees. You know, I don't like the corporate idea of Disney, but, you know, hey, we have employees that are good people. So anyway, Disney has actually put self-imposed bans on some of their kids' programming, their television movies, like Mr. Boogity and Mr. Boogity 2. Now, this wasn't exactly a full-fledged ban, air quotes, but they removed the Boogity series from circulation because they were afraid of some of the imagery. Some of it could be considered, air quotes, satanic, or having stuff to do with demonology, ghosts, the boogeyman. And, well, newer, more modern Disney doesn't exactly want to scare kids. Whatever. So, well, one of the most well-known self-imposed banned films that was made by Disney is Song of the South. Now, why is a children's movie banned? Well, when this movie was made, in the time frame, there were certain racist phrases that were used in the movie, and also the slaves who are in the film are actually viewed upon as extremely negative by the white folk in the movie. And it just, it makes, by today's standard, it's really just horrifying. But if you actually watch it with a mindset of when the film was made, the subject of the time it was made, you can go, oh, okay, now I understand why it's this way. But this is a movie that was supposed to come back out in the 80s, early 90s on VHS, and Disney said this is never going to be released to anyone. I think there may have been a laser disc in the past. Could somebody correct me if I'm wrong on that?
Actually, I can interrupt you right here and say that it did actually hit some theaters around about 86 or so for the film's 40th, because I remember going and seeing it. I was young, going and seeing it, and even then, at that tender age, I was able to go, ooh, there's some material in here that doesn't feel right. You know, I wasn't able to put it into words because I was very, very young, but I just knew that something was off. But the film is beautiful to look at. I mean, it was photographed by Greg Toland, and it's got some catchy tunes. But as you said, some as the kids say today, problematic material.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like the character of Uncle Remus. Very sweet person, caring for the kids. He actually saved one of the children's lives. And he was treated like dirt, like he did nothing, and that he was, and he was the one who caused the problems when he was actually not. And it was just, there's just something funky about it that's just not right. And you know, I actually watched this with a girlfriend I had at the time, and we were both sitting on the couch looking at each other, going, "Oh no." No. But of course, when I actually got this Blu-ray, or not Blu-ray, but DVD from somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody. So we'll just leave it at that. So, Carl, what do you think about it?
I as a general rule, okay, I have to say that I'm not particularly into PC or cancel culture. I think one has to take a look at context.
Yeah.
And particularly of the time. I think that Song of the South being self-imposed ban is wrong. I think certainly if you want to, as they did with the Warner Brothers cartoons, you know, put on a explanation on the Warner Brothers sets that was with those Whoopi Goldberg. And say that there's some material here that you may have problems with in context of the times we live in, that's fine. Okay, I certainly don't have a problem with that. But to take those stories, which are very, very much part of African-American culture, and just because of certain words or certain things to say, well, we can't show them now because people will get triggered, I think it's a bunch of bullshit. Okay? Another film that's related to Song of the South, which I've talked about a number of times on my show, is Coonskin, which I think is an absolutely brilliant film and covers a lot more adult territory of those stories. But that's my feeling on it. So that's what I have to say.
I'm in full agreement with that. I mean, I am not a person for censorship, but I can look, I'll look at something and go, ooh, that would pretty much get set on fire nowadays because of the unfortunate political climate that we're in and the oversensitivity. I'll get to that in a minute, but Disney has decided because of, let's put it, people saying, people being upset that they are going to completely redo Splash Mountain. And it's going to be turned from Song of the South into something on, I think like Princess and the Frog maybe. So I mean that's Splash Mountain itself is an iconic fun time ride. I loved it, and you know that's why things are nowadays. Now, okay, I have noticed throughout my many years of being around that a lot of Tom and Jerry cartoons have been censored. Not because of the violence, because of the violence of the Tom and Jerry cartoons back in the 40s wasn't exactly that extreme, but it's certain characters, their voices were changed, scenes that had them in there were removed, and a lot of them had to deal with the family maid. She was black.
Yep.
And the caricature is kind of iffy. But the way that they have changed the cartoons makes for, you look at this one scene, then, Tom gets whacked upside the head with a frying pan. We don't know by who or by what. And then it goes on. Or, you hear like an end of a conversation or like somebody just go, ah! And where did that voice come from? It's a complete removal of this character from the Tom and Jerry cartoons, who actually had a major role in a lot of these episodes to like move things along or to, do a little plot twist or something or make the situation more difficult for Tom and Jerry. Did this person, did the maid need to be removed technically? I remember both the original and the new, and I'm more of a fan of the original. That's just me. Now, another...
If I can add this, just before I forget, the maid, I know that about a year ago, I saw a Tom and Jerry cartoon for the first time in probably, I'm going to say, 6-7 years on TV. And in those 6 or 7 years, they had completely removed a sequence with the maid, where the maid gets a call from Jerry that Tom has been having basically a hootenanny while she's gone. And he's in there just jamming away with the fellas, the other Tomcats, and they're basically turning the place into a juke joint. And she is playing cards and shooting dice. And she runs home, and not just the voice that she says, but what she says, it's something along the line of, oh, sweet Jesus, no, or something like that. And it is so stereotypical, but at the same time, it was part of the short, and I don't think that it's right to remove that. I understand that people are upset about it, but I don't think that it's right to completely remove it and pretend that it was never there. I'm with Carl that they should do what they did with the Warner Brothers Golden Collection and simply put up a warning where people can know that this material may be difficult to watch. Because, we're never going to be able to have the discussions we need to have about this material if we pretend it never existed.
Exactly. If we make material disappear, like you said, how are we going to learn from it? How are we going to learn from the history of filmic and cartoons and everything? It's all going to be lost. Now, Toho... of the mighty creators of Godzilla, actually have self-banned two films that I actually have my hands on. Both are actually ripped from Laserdisc. Because at a time, back in the time of Laserdisc, you could pretty much get anything imaginable on Laserdisc. And it's it was really a neat time. I never had a Laserdisc player. Actually, the the girlfriend that I watched Song of the South with, her parents had a Laserdisc player. We actually ended up watching the Pink Floyd concert and the Ballad of Guanji on their Laserdisc, and it was awesome. But anyway, so Toho made two films. One of them is called Half Human. Now, Half Human, yes, you can find it around here and there on, like, those, you know, big 50-movie deluxe sets or whatever, or bootlegs. And the version you're going to get is probably 99.9% of the time going to be the version, the Americanized version with John Carey, which has a completely different looking snowman or Bigfoot Yeti, whatever you want to call it, than the one that's actually in the Japanese film, but they integrated the original Japanese film into this one. That's not the version that got banned. The version that got banned from Toho is the original that they produced because it's kind of a weird one to explain. It shows, and there, to quote them, it shows the traditional people of the hills, a.k.a. the native Japanese people, in a negative light, because the villagers in this that were dealing with the snowmen, like the Yeti, did some things that weren't exactly well smiled upon, for that way. And like I said, they were viewed negatively. And it's actually an extremely good, very emotional film. And I can see a little bit of the negativity in there. But Toho decided to self-ban the film and pull it from distribution because of that reason. Now, Toho also had a movie called Prophecies of Nostradamus, which has an absolutely wonderful soundtrack. It's one of my favorite soundtracks of all time. Carl, you did a music show that I mentioned Asao Tomita on, who actually...
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep, and it was just so good. But the reason why this movie was banned because of Japan has major issues with showing people who have radiation sickness, who have been burned in atomic blasts. Also, images of, you know, like native peoples in a negative form. Because in this movie, there's a scene that happens in New Guinea where several explorers actually are found dead and dying from radiation sickness, and the native New Guinea people are shown as having radiation burns and mutations and are attacking our, air quotes, heroes in this film. And also, at the end, spoiler alert on this one, there is a mutated child that is seen. It's obviously makeup and everything, but the movie, when it first came out, was kind of viewed as like, oh boy, this isn't so good. But it was actually released back in the early 90s in seriously edited form with a happy ending by Paramount Video. And it was also put on Laserdisc, and then Toho, I think there's an organization in Japan that basically watches out for the people, and they said, no, we don't want this to be out there anymore. And they talked to Toho, and Toho said, okay, we're going to pull it. And to find an uncut version of the prophecies of Nostradamus and Half Human, good luck. Because if you can find a laser disc of these things, you're talking at least $2,000 to $3,000 per laser disc. And
yeah,
like I said, I've got a copy of both films. Yeah. No, I did not pay that extravagant price for those. But they're films that a lot of people, you know, they've heard of or they've read about, but you'll never be able to see for reasons. You know, I personally, when it comes to these movies, I watch them and go, it's not that bad. You know, okay, yes, that these people were showing me a negative light. Nowhere as bad as a lot of people are shown in movies nowadays. But, you know, that's part of Japanese culture, is to be respectful of everyone, including especially their own history and their own culture. So that was a big one there from South Banning. Have you guys ever seen the movies?
No.
Or in any form? No? Okay. Well, I do have to say that Half Human, oh boy, the version with John Carradine, I've actually saw at a drive-in movie theater. I've seen it before. It hurts. It's one of those movies that it's bad. There's an entertainment factor from the Japanese film that's been cut into, or actually interlaced with American actors, but it's rough. They basically tried to make another Godzilla type situation with Raymond Burr, and it just does not work at all. Now, I actually have a question for you guys. Jerry Lewis made a film that basically he made sure that nobody will ever see unless it's with him in certain special circumstances. I'm not really sure what it's called, but it had a
The Day the Clown Cried.
Yeah, it's yes, The Day the Clown Cried. Trust me.
And The Day the Clown Cried. And apparently, just before he passed, he made an agreement with some releasing company that they had to wait a certain amount of time after he died for it to be released, and about 20 minutes of footage leaked. I don't care about the subject matter. That film, I'm not sure it deserves to be seen, not because it's offensive, which it may or may not be. I'm not going to speak to that after only seeing 20 minutes, but what I can say is the 20 minutes of footage I saw was among the worst 20 minutes of footage I've ever seen of any film.
Really?
It's just fucking bad on every level. I mean, I've seen kids in their backyards doing a better job of holding the camera.
Ooh, that's rough. I was actually not expecting to hear that. You know, well, that could be the reason why he doesn't want anybody to see it. But
I honestly think that's
it's
it.
It's also the subject matter too. The subject matter takes place in a concentration camp, and Jerry Lewis plays a man who's a clown who is there to entertain the children in the camp, and we're just going to get at that. Because the rest of the situation is rather bleak. So, yeah. Anyway.
Yes, yes, bleak is a way of putting it.
They basically sort of kind of remade that with Life is Beautiful, the Roberto Benigni film. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
Well,
with
that movie, to be fair to that movie, I don't want to call it exactly a remake, but it's in the same ballpark. But where Lewis he comes across almost making light of the Holocaust, which I don't think he intended to. Now, Benigni gets accused of that. I don't think that was his intent. But, I'm not Jewish, so I'm not going to speak to whether or not it actually is offensive.
Life
to,
is Beautiful
to
is offensive. I will tell you that. But I have very close friends that I've talked to about it. I'm also, quote, an honorary Jew. I love the religion.
Yeah. Well, for me, the way I've always looked at the movie is it's a greatly, greatly misguided film that thinks it's about a father protecting his son from the horrors of war, when it ends up being maybe something else. It's got some interesting material in it. There could have been a good film there. if it had been handled better. But you know, when I first saw it, I liked it. The second time I saw it, I thought about some of the criticisms I'd heard about it. But you know, I'm not going to take the personal umbrage at it, is what I'm saying. But I can definitely see where people can be offended. So I want to be clear on that when I say that I'm not going to speak to it being offensive personally. But you know, I've got enough Jewish friends that, yeah, they tell me that they have issues with it. So I'll defer to them and say that if they say it's offensive, then it's offensive. Now, for me, as a non-Jew, I have a different response, but that doesn't mean that I can't have my own issues with it. You know, my response doesn't come from being Jewish, just like, you know, your response to, say, Birth of a Nation being offensive would be different being, say, white than black. As a white guy, I'm offended by Birth of a Nation on a whole different way than my best friend when I was younger would have been offended. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, Danae.
Hello, honey.
Hey.
I haven't been online all day. I just got the message. You need to call me or text me.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm glad you're here. It's been a crazy day. It's actually been a crazy weekend.
Yeah, because I thought we weren't going to have a show this week.
We didn't have one last week. We were kind of iffy on this one, and it's just like, you know, we're going to do it because if we don't, well, I'm going to feel really bad. So here we are.
Okay.
I was feeling, I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
Oh, no problem. It's a miscommunication, but we're clear now. Call me next time or text me. Because sometimes I don't get online all day, and I don't have internet on my phone, so.
Gotcha. Okay, well, I'll make sure to call, I promise.
I have a dumb phone. As opposed to a smartphone. So,
well,
I'm going to try not to chomp in y'all's ear.
That's okay. So, the gang's all here. Woohoo!
Yay!
Hail, the gang's all here.
What the hell did we say? What? Never mind. Okay, I'm done.
Well, we kind of bridged the gap into politics, which normally there are no politics on my shows, but you know what? When it deals with film and it deals with film history, that it's perfectly okay. That's fully acceptable. And that's actually a reason why some films have actually been banned, believe it or not, are political reasons. Now, don't be mistaken that some filmmakers, air quotes, makers, who claim that their films are political or their political art, maybe they're not. Maybe they could just be really, really gross and banned in multiple countries because they're just gross. And that's definitely a good possibility with the movie called Salo, which we will talk about next episode, because it's one of those ones you have to prep for and actually, like, go, why did I do this to myself? And also a Serbian film, which we're just going to speak of that one in brief. We're not going to go into complete amount of detail because it's just effing yuck. So.
I think I'm probably the only one in the group that saw it.
What?
I've seen it.
Oh, you have?
Serbian.
Salo? Oh, absolutely. I've seen Salo. I've not seen Serbian.
I've seen a Serbian film.
Okay.
I watched it, but, so you don't have to.
Okay, so if I can interrupt for a second, I just want to give some context. There's a filmmaker by the name of Dusan Macevic, and also Valerian Borovicic. And both of them were from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And there's this whole thing with the Eastern Bloc where they make movies that are very offensive. Machevic, the W.R., Mysteries of the Organism, and Sweet Movie. Borosik did La Bête, also did Immoral Tales. And there's a whole thing with the Eastern Bloc where basically they went apeshit. Let's just leave it at that. So go ahead, guys. I just needed to give you a little bit of historical context there.
Well, I was trying to segue into part of your the topic you wanted to talk about with political banning of films.
Okay, so yeah, I could take this. So one of the films I want to talk about is based on a novel by a gentleman, and I don't have it right in front of me. But think back in the 1970s. Think back to blaxploitation. And you have all these films where, now it's empowerment of the blacks and so on and so forth. Also think of the political situation with Nixon, with Hoover and the FBI. And this particular novel was made into a film. It was directed by Ivan Dixon, who you would best know as an actor. He's a black actor on Hogan's Heroes. And the title of it is, and I'm going to probably piss people off, The Spook Who Sat by the Door. Now, spook, let's talk about that word. That was a pejorative word for the black community. Okay? Just like the N-word was. But also, it has another context, that a spook is a spy. So the whole idea of the movie is that politically the government opens up the FBI to integration. And they hire this guy after looking at all these people, and he's the one who's very quiet and gets the job done. And you know what his job is? To sit by the door and welcome everybody to come in. Ouch. So what does he do? He quits. Goes back to Chicago, takes everything he learns, and then teaches the black community to fight back. Oh, just think about the riots and that were happening at the time. Think about it today. The FBI literally went into theaters and purloined all negatives they couldn't destroy them. Now, luckily, a couple survived. So now you can see the film. But it is, and by the way, the author of it is Sam Brownlee. It is just a brutal ass film. And it's wonderfully done. And that's a film that our government told us not to see.
Yeah, for a long, long time. It took until 2012 when the Library of Congress added it to the National Film Registry.
Yeah. And then Soul Cinema came out with the DVD, which I own. It is a magnificent film. Now, very briefly, I want to bring up a couple others, too. There's a filmmaker by the name of Emil D'Antonio from the 60s and 70s. He made a film called Mill House, A National Tragedy, which was particularly nasty toward Nixon. And he has an FBI, they finally released the FBI files on D'Antonio a couple of years ago. And I think there was something like 700 pages. He was not well liked. He has several other films that he did that were of a political bent, but there's another movie that the American government squashed. Another film, very briefly, is Titicut Follies. Titicut Follies is a documentary on the Massachusetts mental health institution in the 60s, And it was the government of Massachusetts and the federal government pulled together to basically take that off. And for years, the only way you could see it, it was like once a year, and only if the filmmaker was there to screen it. And one other film, very briefly, is 1776, the musical. And Adam, you know a lot about this. Why don't you take that one briefly for our listeners?
Yeah, 1776 is a musical, for those who don't know, about the signing of the Declaration of Independence. It's got a wonderful cast headlined by William Daniels as John Adams. And in the film, there was a sequence called Cool, Considerate Men. Well, this sequence is all about the left-right divide in American politics. The film's producer was Jack Warner, yes, of Warner Brothers. One of his friends was Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon called up Jack Warner and said, I hear that you've got this movie, and I hear there's this sequence in it, and it caused trouble on stage, and you can't possibly let the film version of this contain this sequence. There was nothing I could do about the stage, but certainly there's something my friend can do about the movie. And Jack Warner thought about it for about 10 seconds, long enough for him to clear his throat, grab a drink of water, and say, absolutely, Dick, anything you want. And out went the sequence. Later on, the film was restored, along with about 37 minutes of footage that had been cut. But that sequence there, Cool, Considerate Men, it's not the best song in the film, but it might be the most politically important. And it is, again, all about the left-right divide. It's about landowners versus common people, and the loss of the sequence does a lot to hurt the film. So if you ever get to see the film and you haven't yet, make sure you see the director's cut or the extended director's cut, because otherwise you're not going to see Cool, Considerate Men.
Yeah, and I'll use my favorite word. It's brutal. It's a brutal song, and it just cuts them to shreds. Seriously.
Oh, yeah. We are cool, considerate men. We've got cash in hand, self-command, wealth in the land. But these are some of the lyrics. And it's we dance ever to the right, never to the left, ever to the right, never to the left. And the thing is it's done as some sort of a cross between a waltz and a minuet. And it's just a fantastic sequence, but like Carl says, it's going to piss you off if you're on the right of the spectrum.
Yeah, it really is. And all these films that I mentioned are all political. One other I do have to mention very, very briefly is Barry Sonnenfeld's film Big Trouble, which I love. It is such a fun movie, and it's a comedy. And there's nothing really objectionable about it, except it was due out the weekend of 9/11. And there's a whole sequence at the end with a plane with a bomb on it. And they said, no, we're not releasing this. And it's a goddamn shame, because it's a fucking great film. In many ways, I think it's Sonnenfeld's best. Certainly his least known and his best least known film. And that was more happenstance than political. But nonetheless, since we had the tragedy of 9/11, this was coming out that weekend, they pulled it right away.
Yeah, and it's based on the novel by the columnist Dave Barry.
Right. And it's a great
film. That's
but those are the ones I needed to mention. So I'll kick it back to you guys.
Well, Big Trouble should not be confused with Big Trouble in Little China or Nothing But Trouble. Those are two completely different films.
Or Big Trouble by John Cassavetes.
Well,
I'm going to be honest with the Barbarian Brothers.
Never saw that one. But I'll say this: of all of those movies, give me Big Trouble in Little China any day, and I don't care what anybody says. And if anybody out there has the Blu-ray, if you have the Blu-ray of that movie, give the commentary between Carpenter and Russell a listen. It starts out where they're actually talking about the movie, and within about 10 minutes, they don't even give a shit about what's going on. It's just two friends kibitzing. I mean, acrobatsing. It's amazing. It's simply like an hour and 40 minutes of two buddies catching up.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yep, it's one of the best director's commentaries I've ever seen, just because of how unique it is.
Very cool. Oh, Renee, hello, my dear.
Hello. I'm not prepared. So, what have y'all already discussed? So I don't.
We've talked about a couple of self. Self band films, like Half Human, Prophecies of Nostradamus, Clown That Cried. I know, and a couple other little ones. And then we worked out into like political bannings that you've been here for. So we're pretty much on track. So it's a good thing.
Okay, so I didn't want to go over anything. I mean, unless. It was to give my perspective, of course, but what I wanted to talk about was not necessarily, well, yes and no, band. First of all, I really, really think that they ought to re-release Song of the South. One of the things that has annoyed me, now, number one, I don't have HBO Max, and I'm not going to get it anyway. Number two, no offense to anyone who loves this film. I know it's a classic, but I find Gone with the Wind boring as hell. However, I'm irritated that HBO Max has temporarily taken it off, and they're going to put it back with, guess this, disclaimers, that it has outdated attitudes. I mean, come on, do we really? No, duh. Duh. It takes place during the time of the Civil War. Of course, it's going to have slavery in it. Of course, and maybe the slaves don't actually act like slaves. Maybe they act like, yes, they're ready. I mean, that they're ready and willing to serve their masters, not like really slaves. But here's the thing. You don't need a disclaimer. Everybody already knows the reputation, okay? And another thing that I'm annoyed about, now granted, I don't agree with it being in there in the first place, but they took Fantasia out and cut the two black female centaurs out that were acting as maids. Now, granted, yes, and they were caricatured, okay, and I don't agree with that, but I don't think they should have taken the sequence out, because here, this is what my issue is. You're taking this out, you're banning this, you're banning that. You know, you're taking away our history, and we need to have our history, good and bad. Because if we don't have the bad, we'll never learn from it, and we'll keep repeating ourselves. And there are people that are wanting to ban Blazing Saddles, which I think is a shame, because Blazing Saddles has a good message in it. It's very anti-race. It pokes fun at the stereotypes, and, you know, it's very anti-racist. So, I mean, and they're wanting to take, they're wanting to take, you know, the people off of Uncle Ben and Aunt Jemima, and it's just, it's crazy.
It means you're right, and, you know, a lot of people forget that the, I forgot her name, and I do apologize for that, but the first African-American to ever receive a, excuse me, Oscar was from, was in the film Gone with the Wind, right? Yes?
Hattie McDaniels, yeah.
There you go. So.
And I feel like we're taking that away from her.
I feel the same way. And Aunt Jemima, she was the first African-American millionaire in the United States. Why take that away from her and her family?
Right. And she, here's the thing. She was not a caricature. She, I mean, granted, yeah, the first version had the scarf and the traditional dress, but she looked like a normal person. She didn't have the super black skin and the big, huge lips. She just looked like a normal human being. So did Uncle Ben. And I tell you what,
I hate to interrupt, but I have to go. There's an emergency occurring. Thanks for having me on the show.
Ooh. You're welcome, ma'am.
All right, guys.
Come back anytime, okay, bud?
Bye-bye. Hope everything's okay.
I hope so, too.
So, anyway, Aunt Jemima's granddaughter is very upset about this. And I don't blame her.
I would be, too. I mean, seriously, Aunt Jemima has been an icon for many, many years. And she, in, you know, like we were saying, she was respected. She still is respected. And, you know, she has a place in history. Why take that away from her and her family?
Because we're overly sensitive. Everybody's overly sensitive nowadays. You can't even ask someone where they're from without them getting offended.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's actually, that's not hitting the borderline of ridiculous. That's jumping on the borderline, kicking it, spitting it on it, throwing it in the garbage. That is actually ridiculous.
Well, yeah, the point is the pendulum turns, right? I mean, the pendulum, you know, we have to adapt to a certain degree of what the times are, because 5 or 10 years now, it will change. And one of the reasons we're getting this reaction is because, you know, there's been no acknowledgement of this at all for years and years and years from the perspective of blacks, of gays, and how they're handled, and the LGBT community, and so on and so forth. And unfortunately, what has happened politically and socially is that there's this hot light on all these issues, and then there's a reaction to it. And for every reaction, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And that's where we are right now. For better or for worse, just...
Well, I don't think that they should be banned or altered in any way. I don't even think the original is as vile as it is. I don't even think the Birth of a Nation or Triumph of the Will or any of those should be banned, because it teaches us about how things work. You don't have to like it. You don't have to condone it. But it's the way that it was.
Mm-hmm.
They even want to get Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer. They want to get those books taken out of schools because of the N-word, even though Mark Twain was very much against slavery. And if, you know, it's been a while since I've read the books, but I remember Huck and Tom being on Jim's side and trying to help him.
Absolutely.
They're,
you know,
they're reacting to the word as opposed to what the message is. That's the problem.
Exactly.
Here. And the same with Boys in Saddles. You can't show me another anti-racist film that's more anti-racist than Boys in Saddles.
Exactly.
Seriously. But people go, oh, it's the N-word. Oh, Tarantino uses the N-word. Look at the context. That's what I keep saying. Look at the context.
Right, and a lot of these, and without all these films and the books and different experiences we've had in the past, we can't learn from them, and we can, and, you know, seeing how horrible people were treated in the past and how, just how bad things were and how they were, people are portrayed, that gives people with common sense the idea that we don't want to be like this anymore. We need to change things. We need to make things better. So let's be better than we were in the past and make things right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. One of the things that annoyed me about the remake of The Beguiled is that they totally took out the character of Hallie. And when Sofia Coppola, the director, was asked about this, she says, well, we've talked enough about slavery. But here's the thing. Hallie was a very important character in the book and in the movie. She was not treated as a slave. She was, she helped them with stuff, but she helped them, you know, like prepare meals and do gardening and stuff like that, but she was not a maid. She was very respected by the girls. They did what she did. They did what she told them to do. They respected and obeyed her as much as they did the headmistress and the other teachers. She was a very important character, and I think it does a disservice to totally count her out because you're afraid you might offend somebody.
Yep. Sometimes
thank you for attending
offended,
my TED Talk.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You know, sometimes being offended is a way to make somebody open their eyes and see another way of thinking, and try to make things better. Other times, it turns into keyboard warriors and all that stuff. But, you know, sometimes we just need to be, you know, have that visceral slap in the face by something to make us go, you know what? I need to change myself for the better, or we actually need to, or we need to work on this world situation because it sucks. And, you know, that's what we should do, actually. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, you know, you brought up about the book bans. You brought up an experience that I had when I was younger, and it made me think about why people would want to ban a movie or ban anything in general. And a lot of, and this is not meant to be offensive towards anybody who's religious, but this is my personal experience, and I find it to be completely bizarre. Now, back when I was younger, my father had a very prestigious job in our school system. And I'm not going to mention where, not going to mention when, not going to mention any names, because, we want to keep things a little bit, you know, a little bit ambiguous here. So, being the big person that he was in the school system, there were several parents in that tried to have our school ban several books. One of the books, of course, was, you know, A Wrinkle in Time, and the other book was Lord of the Rings. And
what books were they in? Lord of the Rings and what else?
Lord of the Rings and A Wrinkle in Time. Now, the main individual that was fighting for this was actually very Christian. Now, I'm not really sure if she realized or not, I doubt she did, that these two books, Lord of the Rings and A Wrinkle in Time, were both written by Christian authors with Christian ideals throughout the books. But she fought and fought and fought to get these books removed from our library, and my father was like, no, not going to happen. Number one, you're taking good literature away from children. Number two, you're taking imagination away from children. And number three, these books are based on the Christian belief system.
Exactly. Just like the Chronicles of Narnia.
That's another one. Yeah, exactly.
The Wizards. Actually, I read an interesting article about this. The Wizards in Lord of the Rings represented angels. And Saruman was a representative of Satan.
There you go.
Now, simplistic. There's a lot more to it. I've studied the
there is a lot more to it.
Okay.
Basically, yeah. And plus, him being of Norse, I believe he was of Scandinavian descent, and he was very fascinated by Norse history and Norse mythology, and so he threw that in there, too. That was a big influence on Lord of the Rings also. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. And in fact, Tolkien and C.S. Lewis were great friends and confidants, and they'd be working on a book and throw some stuff out to the other, and they'd argue about it, and then the author would go and write his book. So, you know, the influence is from both of the people there. You know? So, there you go.
Right. So, I was actually guiding this one into what I would like to go over for our next episode, because it's almost 9 o'clock, and am I starting to have a little bit of difficulties over here. Now, next episode we're going to go into how religions and different belief systems would affect how films are banned or how they'd be accepted or brought into different countries. And we'll definitely be talking about Life of Brian, because that's a big one. And yes, Monty Python's Life of Brian was banned for many years in many different countries. And so was the meaning of life. So we'll definitely get into that.
I have to do this. I'm sorry. I have to do this. Every sperm is sacred. If a sperm is wasted, God gets quite a rake.
That's not from Life of Brian. That's from...
That's from the meaning of life.
The meaning of life.
If you're doing Life of Brian, you gotta go look on the bright side of life.
Look on the bright side of life. Yeah, I know that he mentioned the meaning of life, and that is probably one of the few skits in that movie I actually enjoyed.
Yeah, the Mr. Creosote one is just a little bit, oof, a little bit gooey.
Yeah,
now for something completely different is my favorite of their skit movies.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
That was actually my first introduction to them.
Yeah, same here, actually. When you get into religious films, too, I'll mention some of those, too. I had other ones, and not just Christian films, either. So just want to give you a heads up for next show.
Well, we're going to be getting into a little bit of a touchy area next week. So we are here to inform, not to offend. But we may get a little on the risque side because of the subject matter of the films. So I just want to let everybody know we're here to help everybody learn about this subject. And we're going to be talking about like Ken Russell, The Devils, and you know, all sorts of interesting things next week. So, Danae, thank you so much. What's that?
I said I love The Devils.
You've seen it?
Yes, I've seen it twice.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I have to dig out my copy from
you. Hold on. With the Rape of Christ sequence or not?
With the what?
No, that just answers my question. Okay, thank you.
Right.
The Rape of Christ sequence. That's the sequence that you cannot see.
Yeah. That,
they won't let you see it.
That's the reason why. We'll get into that one then. That's the touchy, very, oh my gosh, subject matter. Like I said, we're here not to purposely offend. We are here to teach and enjoy each other's company and our listeners' company. So we shall be back next week on this coming Sunday. Right, today's Sunday. One week from today at 8 p.m. With our next episode, and we're going to be going into the religious aspects of film censorship and ban. So it'll be a great time. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, Danae, for
Can I just do a little plug here? Okay, so Tuesday on Carl's Cavern, my guest will be Limes Marshall, and Limes and I will be talking about the In Memoriam to John Saxon. Okay, and we'll be doing that on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Adam, if I remember correctly, and I think I am, on Friday, Adam will do a show on Phil Silvers and Sergeant Bilko on the Cathode Warrior Mission. On Saturday, we have a very special show. This is our second in the series of ISF podcast shows, and we are going to have director Trent Harris on. Trent is an independent. He's out of Salt Lake City. Best known film that he did was Reuben and Ed, and that's the one that starred Howard Hesseman, Karen Black, and Crispin Glover. He also is well known for the Beaver Trilogy, too, which is a trilogy of short films that he then edited into one long one. Has a number of other films. Very weird, very strange sense of humor. That should be a lot of fun. We're going to do that on Saturday. And, of course, a week from today, we've got your show. But a week from Tuesday, we're going to have our third ISF podcast. And that's going to feature Joe Moran. And his film just hit VOD, and that is Sister Tempest. And so we'll be talking to Joe on that, and we've got lots more planned for the ISF podcast. So people, I'll make sure that it's on Deviant Legion. If you want, come over to Incredibly Strange Films FB group and join us there also, because we have the list of films there. That's what I got. So sorry, but I had to do that.
Oh, no problem. That's what we're here for. And I'm actually going to be compiling a list of films and different little things that have had have been impacted for our show next week. And we're going to have a good time with this one. Like I said, there may be. Go ahead.
Can I add in one thing? I'm sorry, it just hit me because my friend Carrie and I were talking about earlier today. Clockwork Orange was actually, I think, one of the only films that was actually a self-banned. After there were puppy cat crimes, Kubrick would not allow the film to be shown in England until after his death, because he felt responsible for it. And I don't think I have ever heard of an artist self-censoring since the Hays Code.
Yeah, we'll definitely look into that. And we're going to have a good show next week. And I just got confirmation from Adam that everything is okay. So not to worry,
good.
Other listeners, everything's going to be just fine. All right, so we appreciate everybody listening in for our show. Just a reminder, things may get a little bit yikes next week, but you know what? That's part of the deal. And we're not here to purposely offend. We're here to have fun and help educate people on film and different subjects. So, all right, I think we're... where'd the heck did that darn foghorn go? I think Spooky hit it. Oh, darn it. Okay, oh, wait, here he is.
Oh, allow me. Allow me.
Sure. Okay.
What the?
What's that? That was me. My impression of a foghorn. You're welcome.
Spooky just dragged in the foghorn, so I think we got it.
That's right. I think that sounded more like a seal in heat, but never mind.
I'm not a seal. I'm a mermaid.
Okay.
Hey, Carl, was that your seal of approval?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let me clap.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Hehehe